But to get back to the actual question, I'm not sure what "are you okay with it" is really asking. Like, do I? I think it's.
I'm asking now. You're okay with it? It's not rocket science, dude.
Do I think it is always the best business model? Is that the question? Or like, okay with it as a business model? Okay,
no,
with
I'm
it
just asking
philosophically.
I'm asking. Like, dude, I don't know. Am I speaking German? I don't know if this is a particularly complicated question. I'm just saying, is the notion of someone building proprietary add-ons on top of a objectively, genuinely open source project, are you okay with, are you comfortable with that model? Do you, understanding that it's not perfect, there are flaws with every business model that we just went through, but is that a model that you outright object to, or is that something you feel comfortable with?
Welcome to Bad Voltage. This is Season 3, Episode 9, being recorded on the 21st of July, 2020. And I would like to open this, unusually for us, with a quotation from the Bible.
I wasn't expecting this. Okay.
I was also not expecting
it. I came across this, and I felt that, surprisingly, the Holy Book of the Christians seems to have really captured the spirit of 2020 for me. Right, and this is it's the truth. This is
King. No pun intended.
oh dear, this is from the King James, Hebrews, chapter 13, verse 8, and I swear this is what that verse reads, summarizing 2020, and it is Jesus Christ, the same yesterday and today and forever. And I feel like I might have that hacked above the stone above my door. And I saw that in one of these, you know, these sort of meme pictures where someone takes a nice picture of a lake or something and then writes words of wisdom on it in some, in a font right. They just downloaded. I saw that and I thought, what? That can't possibly be right. And so I went and looked it up.
Started a little heavier than the average Bad Voltage.
It certainly did.
Yeah. Well, I thought, you know, we're not talking about coronavirus anymore, or hopefully ever, ever, ever again. And so,
yes. Yeah, we did do our two-part special report on coronavirus. So, yes, welcome everybody. I hope you're all safe and well. Well, today we're going to talk about Open Core. This is going to be another one of those bumper long shows. Don't worry, we'll get back to the news probably in the next one. But we are going to spend the entire show today talking about Open Core, which is a model that has generated a bit of discussion in the open source world about the merits and the disadvantages of such a model, if it is a model in the first place, as we'll get into. So be sure to stick around for that. Anything else before we get on with this, gentlemen?
I would very briefly like to say thank you to Marius of NerdZoom Media for being our editor.
Yes.
And thank you very much for that. And
does an amazing job.
I've finally got the new cable he's been badgering me to get, so hopefully he'll be happier now.
Curious if you're going to sound any better.
Was it a parallel port cable?
it's a parallel port. You wouldn't believe going through my Leeds box. You would not believe the rubbish I found in there. I'm going through going, what does this plug into? What did it ever plug into? I don't even recognize the thing on the end of this. Nuts. And you know those USB plugs with the square end that you used to have to plug into printers? Right?
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And you think, yeah, I vaguely remember them. Why have I got 5? And what can I do?
Didn't realize you were a hoarder.
Well, cables, you never throw any cables away, because throwing a cable away guarantees you will need it the following week. I've been bitten once, never happening again. But I'm going through it going, I must have a cable that plugs into a Blue Yeti. And I'm pulling one out going, no, no. And I've got a bunch, all of which are about 3 inches long. Which
you know what? Those square USB cables, for some reason, to this day, almost every piece of musical equipment that connects via USB uses one of those. Don't know why.
In that case, would you like a bunch?
Yes, actually, because I've got one, and I'm worried at some point it's going to just evaporate into dust at some point, and I won't be able to buy them anymore.
Seriously, so. I assume they're all the same. If they are, I'm not kidding, I've got five. You are welcome to.
Although, I like how you asked, I wonder why I have all these, and then 1 minute later said, never throw out a cable.
Well, no.
You have, in fact, answered your own question.
I understand why I still have them. I don't understand why I got them in the first place.
Oh, it's not why you have them now, it's the acquisition of them. I gotcha. All right.
I mean, like, I don't think I've owned five printers in total, let alone at once.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. The Bible and cables. That crime-fighting duo at the beginning of Bad Voltage. All right.
Shall we
do this?
I was going to say, now on to this episode, brought to you by the letter F.
That is the innest of in-jokes, by the way. Open core. These are two words that have been talked about quite a bit in, I'd say, the last probably 3 or 4 years in the open source world. And open core is something that has attracted some people who are very interested in it, like businesses who are quite interested in it, like GitLab and Styra and DataStax and Redis and all these different companies. But it's also a concept that has attracted some detractors as well. There's been a number of people like Simon Phipps and Matt Acey who've said outright that they think open core is a bad model. So we thought we'd get into it, right? And then we planned the show. And we talked about this segment. We do actually do some planning, you Philistines, by the way, if you're trying to accuse us of otherwise. And we realize that we're not entirely sure we agree on the fucking definition of open core, let alone anything else. So why don't we start there? Now, Jeremy, you dug up something on Salt, right? That their definition, and then we're going to talk about a different definition that Mr. Langridge is going to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of like the way that they articulated on their site. So I'm just going to read it straight from their FAQ, and then we can comment on it if we want. But the FAQ entry is Salt open core? And their answer is no. Salt is 100% committed to being open source, including all of our APIs. It is developed under the Apache 2 license, allowing it to be used in both open and proprietary projects. To expand on this a little, there is much argument over the actual definition of open core. From our standpoint, Salt is open source because, one, it's a standalone product that anyone is free to use. Two, it is developed in the open with contributions accepted from the community for the good of the project. Three, there are no features of Salt itself that are restricted to separate proprietary products distributed by SaltStack, Inc. Four, because of the Apache 2 license, Salt can be used as the foundation for a project or even a proprietary tool. And five, our APIs are open and documented, and any lack of documentation is an oversight that will be ostensibly corrected as opposed to an intentional decision by SaltStack, the company. And so their final sentence is, SaltStack, the company, does make proprietary products which use Salt and Salt's libraries, like any other company is free to do, but we do so via the public APIs, not by forking Salt or making a different distribution, and not by creating different creating different closed source versions of it for paying customers.
So it's very clear in that definition that they're basically saying everything to do with Salt, it's open.
Yes.
Right? The thing they're very clear about
is not a proprietary version of Salt. It's a additional thing built on Salt's APIs that is different.
It sits on top of it. Yeah. Or it connects to it. Right. Now, so again, when we were prepping this show, we spent quite a bit of time talking about that. We'll get to in a second. But then we started arguing with each other about the definition of open core. So Mr. Langridge, do you want to share the definition of open core according to the one true bastion of all knowledge, which is, of course, Wikipedia?
Well, I mean,
not johnabacon.com. We know that's the other bastion of all knowledge.
I think a fair few people, if they were looking for definition, the first thing they do is type into Google, and the first thing they're going to get the Wikipedia page about it.
Indeed.
And
yes.
The Wikipedia page, which... You know, taken with the pinch of salt, that all Wikipedia things come with, says the open core model. The open core model primarily involves offering a core, in quotes, or feature limited version of a software product as free and open source software, while offering, quote, commercial versions or add-ons as proprietary software. And I think that would. Well, from my point of view, I think a lot of people's instinctive reaction to it is that that's actually not a bad summary, especially people who don't like the idea of open core. I think the reason they don't like the idea of open core is because that's what they think open core is. That what you get is basically a noddy version.
Right.
Like they go, yeah, it's open source, but it's actually limited, like shareware stuff used to be in the past, or it's missing something which basically everyone needs, which is suddenly a proprietary plugin. So, yeah. And the objection is that people who are doing that are looking to get all the benefits of saying we're open source while still being able to keep critical stuff closed source.
It's a Trojan horse, essentially.
They're the only people who can monetize it, who can make changes to it, who can shape its direction. So they want the benefits of saying open source without having to give up any of the control or any of the money, which is not how open source works.
Now, what was interesting to me is that, again, when we were prepping this show, we suggested the idea of the topic of open core, and then we immediately, as we often do, started arguing with each other about it. But what we zoned in on, which I think is just a cut to the chase, is that definition on Wikipedia, the critical piece of it is feature limited version.
Yes.
Right? Now, this is where I think it gets interesting, because my personal view of open core is that it isn't intentionally feature limited. So when I think of someone like GitLab, like I would point to GitLab as being one of the finest examples of open core out there, is they've built a open source platform, GitLab Community Edition, and it's very, very comprehensive in what it can do. It's not locked down. It's not limited. It's not got any kind of anything like that. But then what they've done is they've then built a commercial product which takes that and it adds a Jetpack onto it, and it does loads of extra things. I think part of the reason why people get so fiery about open core is they're actually talking about two different definitions here. You know, it reminds me a little bit of, without getting into politics, I remember reading somewhere about the academic definition of racism, and there's another definition of racism which are quite different, and people often are bickering with each other about racism because they're kind of using different definitions, and it almost seems like that's kind of happening here with open core. What do you guys think about that?
I think you say not to talk about politics and then talk about politics an alarming amount.
Well, it's because it's relevant. It's interesting. Yeah. I just don't want to get into it.
So going back to this, I think what's interesting to me is like many things, it's pretty nuanced, and there isn't really an open core model. Just like there's no business, the open source business model, there's no open core model. There's a spectrum of companies that are doing things that some would consider open core and some wouldn't consider open core. So Salt is right. Is not by their definition. I think by some definitions, people would consider Salt open core. Personally, I don't. I'd be curious for the folks that think Salt is open core. Do they think Postgres is open core? Because you have Enterprise DB making a proprietary version of Postgres. You have a bunch of companies that sell closed plugins to Postgres, or things that are closed around Postgres, like clustering and other things. Hmm. Does that make Postgres an open core project? Which seems... I don't think so personally, but I also don't think Salt
doesn't seem like it to me.
Curious where people fall on that one. That's one thing I thought may help. You mentioned GitLab. I think GitLab is an interesting example for a couple of reasons. One, like with everything they do, they're super transparent and they're very collaborative in their approach. One thing that I like is Sid very explicitly spells out how they decide what goes where in a way that not a lot of other open core companies do. So from him, it's if the feature is aimed at an individual contributor, it's in the open source version. If it's aimed at a manager, it's in their first paid tier. If it's aimed at a director, it's at their second paid tier. And if it's aimed at a C-level exec, it's in their highest tier. And even recently went through every feature they had and reassessed, reevaluated what they were, and they made 18 features that were in various tiers open source. So I think that it's an interesting approach to say, okay, here's who we're selling to. If it's going to be used by a contributor, it's just in the open source version.
I think the kind of rule of thumb test I have is, if you look at Salt as an example, they have some people working on the core product and some people working on the proprietary add-ons. if you were to split the company down the middle and make the people working on the proprietary add-ons a separate company with an office somewhere else, so they had to relate to the open source project the way every other company does, would it break the way they do business? And we saw, I don't think it does. And that's exactly the point they're trying to put across.
No, they're very clear that they only use public APIs. Right.
Yeah. And so from my perspective, that's not open core. I agree with them. Or if it is open, it's not relevant whether it's open core. My point is, I think that's okay to do. Exactly okay. You brand or badge that business model, not really relevant. That's a reasonable thing to do. It's where the people building the proprietary stuff are either they've either got access to a bunch of documentation that the other people haven't got, like, for example, being able to walk down the hall and ask the guy who built it, do me a favor and just stick me an API in to do this, will you? Which other people don't have access to. Or they're using non-public APIs. Or the company has decided that this plugin is technically, it's a plugin and it's separate and therefore that's okay. But in practice, everybody actually needs it.
Yeah.
At that point, you're doing the wrong thing that I don't agree with. Or rather, you're doing a thing which you can decide to do, but you're not open source.
Would we agree, going back to the Wikipedia definition, that if you are building a piece of open source software that is intentionally feature limited, that's a bad thing, right? The culture of the open source project should be that people can generally add features and make it as good as possible. I think we would all agree that that's probably a bad thing, right?
Well, saying a priori that's a bad thing is not necessarily a good idea, because there are some projects which are feature limited because they don't want to grow any bigger. I mean, give you a stupid example from like this week. Pick, which is a color picker thing that I built for Ubuntu. A bunch of people use it. It does one thing and one thing only. It lets you pick a color off the screen and then keeps a list of the colors that you've picked previously. Right. And then it'll give you the definition of that color as HTML or as GDK colors or whatever. That's all it does. And I get a bunch of feature requests from people saying, can you make it do this? Can you make it do this? And I'm like, no.
Have you built a mail client into it yet?
Precisely. And that it is feature limited. It has a feature and it's not growing any more features. And if someone were to send me a pull request to add a feature, I'd reject it. But I don't think that's inherently a bad thing. Just being feature limited is not a problem. It's where you acknowledge that people want the extra thing and that everyone wants the extra thing, but you decide to charge for that, but still attempt to call your project open source, that is problematic because it's sort of de facto feature limited, even if not de jure.
So then what is your opinion on the GitLab model?
I think it's fine, but I'm aware of my bias here because I'm not a C-level executive and I'm not a director. So the open source side of me is warring with the red flag side of me, which is, make corporations pay for stuff because they've got all the money. So I'm not 100% sure how I feel about it. I mean, in general, they seem to do a good thing, and I can use GitLab myself if I want to with no impingement. The features that are locked up in proprietary code are stuff that I don't care about anyway.
So that's probably not true for hosts. So the other thing we should clarify with GitLab is, if you have a public project that is open source on gitlab.com, you get everything up to the gold tier. So everything up to the last tier you get.
Right, okay. Free.
Even things like approvals are not in the free version if you're self-hosted. PR approvals.
Oh, okay.
Because that would be aimed at a manager. Because if you're a very small project with no managers, why would you need approvals?
Why would you need approvals? Yeah, you just do it. Or you could say, okay, the approval procedure is I give you commit rights or I don't, and you like email me a patch or something.
Yeah. I'm curious what you think of another, because I think it always helps me and is illustrative if you can talk about a specific project. So
concrete example.
Building on your color picker, that's basically what Redis Labs is, right? Redis was written by Antires, who's very opinionated on what Redis and Redis should and shouldn't be.
And I mean, I consider myself an enthusiastic amateur at being opinionated, thinking of turning pro in the autumn, right? And Salvatore leaves me in the dust. He's very opinionated and quite wrong about a lot of stuff, but certainly very opinionated.
But I mean, his opinion of Redis Labs is, here are a couple of things that people asked for Redis to do for years. I was very clear would never be in Redis. The company Redis Labs adds those things. So like Redis Search and all the JSON stuff that they added.
Yeah.
He were requested for years and he was like, nope, that's not what Redis does. Never going to happen. Now Redis, the company employs him, Redis Labs employs him, and they sell a thing built on Redis. What's your opinion of that model? Because they didn't take away a thing, and the thing would definitely have never happened in the core project.
One of the things that I don't know is, would it be possible for someone else to have built the stuff that they built? Is it built on public Redis APIs? And I don't know the answer to that. And I tried to work it out, and I don't know. I think the Redis Lab stuff, as I understand it, is not a Redis plugin. It's basically a Redis fork.
Yes, it's more of a Redis distribution.
Yeah. To my understanding. So in essence, what they're doing is they're taking an open source project and forking it into a proprietary project. And that's, you're allowed to do that, right? I mean, if you don't like that, GPL your project. If you didn't GPL your project, you are by definition okay with people doing that.
Yep. I think where this gets complicated, my broad view here is, I actually think when people are talking about open core, we're often talking about very similar things, but there is a lot of miscommunication happening here. And to me, let's take, for example, Mattermost, right? Who, for those people who are unfamiliar with Mattermost, it's kind of like Slack, but it's open source, and you can run your own backend. I think if Mattermost started the, first of all, I think my definition of open core is the primary investor in building out an open source project is a company. It is the Canonical to Ubuntu. It is the Red Hat to RHEL. You know, it is the HashiCorp to Vault, right? Is that there's one main company behind it. And what their strategy is they're going to build an open source piece of software that's really useful to people. And then that builds an audience, and then they will sell services or additions or products on top of that. Now, if Mattermost, for example, created their open source piece of software called Mattermost, and they said, for example, you can't create channels, to me, that would be such a feature limiting thing that it would essentially make the actual project itself kind of useless. But what they've instead done, I think what GitLab have done, is they've built so much functionality into the open source project that it could stand alone without a company and be useful by definition. So then what happens is, I think if the company then goes and builds the equivalent of Mattermost Enterprise or GitHub Enterprise or whatever it might be, where you layer on additional features that you wouldn't put into the core version, into the open source version, I think that's okay. I think it's okay if you're basically building, you can choose where to focus your paid engineering talent, right? You can, GitLab can tell their engineers to work on whatever they want to, right? But the other question there to me is then, what is the policy in terms of how that open source project is run? And this kind of gets back to what you were saying earlier on, Ak, about, if the only way to get code into the open source project is you've got to be in the old boys club that's really closely aligned with that company, it's not an open source project. So to me, where I think we have a lot of problem with open core is that the open source projects in some cases are not operating open enough. And I think GitLab and Mattermost are good examples of doing it well, but there are many examples of company, like take Android, for example.
Yeah,
Android is a bad example of an open source project.
Exactly.
Well, it's a good example of a bad open source project.
I think... this is what I meant earlier about the about dividing the company down the middle. If having an open source project with proprietary add-ons, fine, right? If you are the sort of person who thinks that that in itself is not okay, you're not going to be okay with anything we describe here. So I would I would sign out of this whole segment. Right?
Yeah, switch off.
you're not going to like this. Okay, we get.
I think 10 years ago, Ak would have signed out of this.
Absolutely, I would. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I would say probably 15, but yeah.
15, yeah. but the point still stands.
But the point absolutely stands. So the question becomes, could the proprietary stuff have been built by someone else? If the answer is yes, you are an open source project and you just happen to sell proprietary add-ons. If the answer is no, then you are open core, in my opinion. Because the proprietary stuff is able to be built because of stuff that you have that other people don't. Whether that's access to the developers, access to internal APIs, access to documentation, the ability to steer the strategy of the project, whatever.
I mean, by that definition, QMail is open core, and I don't, like, there's so many open source projects that it's impossible to get things accepted into that are just projects and not products and no company.
Right.
So I don't know that that's a business model or open core thing.
They're not, well, this is why, I mean, part of this, and it seems a bit silly to say, is open core a good business model, but I'm not sure open core exists. It's one of these things where people have boiled down a very complicated and nuanced discussion into a couple of words, so it makes it look like there's only one concept to talk about. It's like cloud. You go, should my next project be built in the cloud? And you're like, how the hell do I answer that question? What does that mean, even?
It's not a small question.
No, exactly. But the fact that there's a convenient buzzword to hang the concept on makes it feel like it's simple to talk about. And it isn't, which is why I think taking some arbitrary point on the line between completely open source, completely proprietary, paid for, not paid for, you know, somewhere in this two-dimensional graph, and drawing a circle and saying inside this circle is open core, is kind of meaningless because the dividing line is kind of arbitrary.
And it's tricky, isn't it? Because if you take a typical open source, let's take Linux, for example, right, which is completely open source. And you take a company that invests a lot of engineering time into Linux, let's say Intel, for example. Intel get to choose what their engineers get to work on, right? They're not obliged to work on anything against their will, but they are obliged to follow the coding requirements and conventions or cultural expectations of that project. And I think that's one of the things that makes open source so great. So where it gets tricky here, I think, is let's say you have a project like Open Policy Agent, right, which is part of the CNCF, and you've got a company called Styra they've got a bunch of engineers who are working on that. Styra really get to choose what they spend their engineering time on, and I think we'd all agree that that's fine and fair and reasonable. So to me, technically, some people will call that open core, but I don't know whether, when you look at the Wikipedia definition, whether it says feature limited, technically, not building things that the hive mind wants in that project is technically feature limiting something, right? But I think we all know that that's not the case, right? I don't know of any open source projects, probably with the exception of Android, where they have been intentionally feature limited to sell a proprietary product. Do you guys know what
I mean? I think their definition of feature limited implies not that that feature is not available at all. It implies the feature is available, but it's in the proprietary bit. So you've got a project which is incomplete in itself, but it is complete as long as you include the proprietary add-ons. Something where a feature is not available at all, anywhere, that's not really feature limited. It's just not done yet. And that leads into a useful sort of bell, book, and candle test for making a company commit to how open source or open core, whatever they are. If they've got an open source project and they sell a proprietary add-on, show up with a pull request to implement what the proprietary add-on does in the open source project and see what they say.
See, that is the most elephanty of elephants that can be in the room when it comes to open core.
Yeah.
The thing about Android is it's an interesting example, I think, for a couple of reasons. Depending on what your definition of open source is, it is open source, right? The Android open source project contains everything developers need to build Android. In that regard, it is open source project. It does not include everything you need to have a smartphone OS. So if your goal is to have a smartphone with a full-blown ecosystem underneath it, that's not Android open source. But if what you want to do is build Android for the feature sets that Android solves, it is open source. You can contribute to it. They will accept patches. But is your, like, what's the line there?
Yeah, and interestingly in that, so leave aside the idea that in order to have a fully functional smartphone OS, you need Google Maps and Gmail and whatnot.
Because it doesn't come with Google's apps, and it doesn't come with Play Services. And increasingly, they're building a whole bunch into Play Services.
Well, bear with me. That's exactly the point here. So leave aside things like the Play Store and so on. Google are bundling a whole bunch of stuff into Play Services now, which is not open source. And the reason for that is slightly unfair, I think, because you put an open source project out into the world, the whole point is people can take it and use it how they like. So what happened was loads and loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of phone manufacturers took it and used it how they like by putting it on phones and then never updating it. Yes. The point is everyone blamed Google for that. And so Google went, you know, they must have sat around a table somewhere and gone, there's nothing we can do about it. We open sourced it. People can take it and do what they want with it. Included in what you want with it is putting it on a phone and then never updating it. We can't make people do that. What do we do? And so the answer is, okay, there are only two ways to do this. We either go, that's the way it is, suck it up, or we make a bunch of stuff be under our control. So when we get blamed, we can fix it, by which we will force them to accept OTAs, you know, over-the-air updates, even if the manufacturers don't want to update it, by sticking half of Android inside Play Services, which we can update through the Play Store.
It is both the carrot and the stick. Interesting.
Yeah. It's weird. So, so I kind of get why. I mean, imagine you went to the Apache Foundation and said some people have, a bunch of people have taken one of your projects and made it popular, but we don't like the way they're using it. You need to fix it. Apache would go, nothing we can do about it. That's the way it works. And Google could have said that, but because it's bad PR to do so, and they care about the PR because the money eventually flows back to them. And if you don't like Android, you go and buy an iPhone and no money flows back to them. So, you know, so they had to move away from the whole open source model, which basically made Android open core.
Am I correct in assuming, just to understand both of your perspectives, that you're okay with the notion that, again, I know we keep going back to GitLab, and GitLab are kind of a bit of a unicorn in this regard because they are so outrageously open and transparent about things, way more so than many, and they're a great example. But
I would say way more so than any, not many.
Yeah.
The fact that their handbook, there's basically nothing that's not available.
Yeah.
So anyways.
I mean, not to that extent, but there's a lot of companies who are very open in how they work, but GitLab does take it to a whole new level. But am I correct in assuming that both of you think that broadly, if you have a really comprehensive open source project that offers a lot of value standalone and has contributors to that project who are not just from a single company, so it's a real open source project, that is, if you then have one or more company that then builds, you know, proprietary additional bits of software that sits on top of that, that you're okay with that? Because I'm okay with that, so long as the culture of the open source project is intact. If it's just engineers working on an open source project and it's a bit of a sham, then I'm not okay with that. But I'm just curious to see, with that definition, would you both be okay with that?
Yeah.
I'll let you go first.
Well, what I was going to say was, yeah, I'm okay with it in the same way that I'm okay with democracy, in that I think that model has problems. I just can't think of anything better.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I would much rather
it's not without its limitations.
Yeah. I would much rather there wasn't the need for proprietary add-ons. Equally, people have got to eat, and I want people to be able to eat and go on developing software and getting paid for it. And no one's come up with a better model so far than that.
I mean, there's,
and there will, in theory, there will be people listening to this going, no, what you do is you make it open source and then money just sort of arrives somehow anyway, but presumably those people all signed out of this segment 10 minutes ago, so we don't have to listen to
them. The other model, of course, is like, the other model is, you know, you have services and training and certification, stuff that wraps around it, but that's not software related. But putting that to one side, I'm just talking about specifically software.
Yeah.
You're begrudgingly okay with it, but just because you'd prefer something that's more free software.
I'd prefer it if it was all open source, but equally, Right. It doesn't work. We've tried the be open source and see if money just distills out of the air around your building, and it doesn't work.
Haven't seen it yet. What do you think, Jeremy?
I mean, couple things to unpack here. It's not like other, I guess, for whatever reason, less controversial models aren't without inherent conflicts of their own, right? If your model is support and services, there is a kind of intrinsic balance of, well, if we make this really tough to install, we'll get more services. If we make it outrageously easy to install, we get no money. So this isn't the only...
That seems to dovetail to me very neatly. The idea that the sort of company who would say, yeah, here's our open source project, but in order to save to disk, you need the proprietary saved disk add-on, are exactly the same sort of people who would go, here's our open source project, but it's really hard to install, but you can fix that by hiring us to install it for you at the low, low cost of.
But yeah. to get back to the actual question, I'm not sure what are you okay with it is really asking. Like, what is my opinion of it? I mean, am I okay with a company that writes software and then follows their own license? I mean, I don't know what I have to not be okay with this. Like, do I think it is always the best business model? Is that the question? Or like, okay with it as a business model? Okay with it philosophically? Like, I...
Am I speaking German? I don't know if this is a particularly complicated question. I'm just saying, is the notion of someone building proprietary add-ons on top of a objectively, genuinely open source project, are you comfortable with that model? Do you, understanding that it's not perfect, there are flaws with every business model that we just went through, but is that a model that you outright object to, or is that something you feel comfortable with?
So it's not a model outright reject. I think, to Ak's point a little bit earlier, there's a wide spectrum here. And I think if you're going to do it the way Salt does it, I think it's great. If you're going to do it on the other end of the spectrum, it's more, yeah. I guess, what do I think of as a business model is probably a better question. And I suspect that I think part of this is, if you're selling software, you have to make it very clear why customers should pay, what they're paying, and have them understand what they're paying for. And then align that well. Like, I'm more of a Friedman guy, I guess, than a, you know, I think if that make, if I don't know how much you guys are into economics before I start explaining all this, but
let's move on.
I'm sorry, I'm not a Friedman guy. I'm more of a Drucker guy. Like, a company exists to create a market for a solution, not just to return money to their shareholders, right? So I fall into the
course, Drucker. Yeah.
Okay. Well, no, a lot of people are more Friedman people.
Yeah, so. I can say the of course there. Yeah, I mean, I think of course as well. Whole lot of people would utterly disagree with that as a point of view.
So I think
those people are wrong.
In my opinion, a lot of why this discussion has become a hot topic lately, in my opinion, is I think there are some companies out there that took a bunch of VC money, didn't have a great business model, and are now iterating on OpenCore and other business models to try to get the return that they need to get to exit in a way that their VCs are happy. So this is a discussion that's happening a lot these days. And I think some of those companies, the painful answer is going to be they didn't understand what their business model was or what they were really selling. And that probably doesn't end well for those companies. OpenCore or otherwise.
Just with my consulting business, I work with a number of open core companies, and I'm yet to stumble across somebody who they're focusing on this model for what I would consider to be all the wrong intentions. They're just like, this is just a Trojan horse that we can use to get a high return later on. I think a lot of these companies are founded by people who are first and foremost open source people. They've spent a lot of time working on various open source projects, but then they're like, okay, how do we now make money from this? Well, it's logical that we could build an enterprise version of it. And they see this as a good model to do that. So to me, the intention with many of these businesses, I think, is actually reasonable. The problem I've got with it is I think a lot of them do it wrong. Is that what they do is they focus extensively on the commercialization element and the go-to-market pieces. But what they don't do is that what I would call that connective tissue between a completely open source project and a completely proprietary a company, they don't build that cultural bridge, right? I mean, just when I think back to, for example, when we were at Canonical, so much of our time was spent on not just building Ubuntu, but also trying to build the right culture between Canonical staff members and the community, and providing reassurances that Canonical was doing it with the right kind of intentions. And we made good decisions and bad decisions in that area. And I actually think where you get companies that don't do a good job in this is because they don't understand that culture of open source and they don't build that connective tissue. So what happens is you get animosity brewing between both sides of it. You know, the company will be like, this bunch of whiners in the community, we've devoted all of this engineering time and they don't appreciate anything. And then in the community, they're like, this company doesn't get the fact that we're actually an open source project and they're just trying to monopolize, you know, what we've got.
Which
here.
Which is why the people building add-ons should communicate, interoperate with the core project team the same way every other contributor does.
Exactly.
And then the problem basically goes away. I mean, obviously there's going to be a certain amount of you run into someone at lunch and have a chat about it, right? But that applies, going back to last week's conversation about remote work, that applies exactly the same way to that. That's kind of inherent to the thing. And what you do is you try and work around that. But largely, if the people building add-ons and the people building the project communicate the same way that someone in another company building an add-on and the people building the project communicate, then you basically don't have a problem. You are obliged to put in place methods of communication which are available to everybody and have some kind of relatively transparent system for saying yes or no. Even if you're transparent about the fact that, yeah, we're putting this in because we want it, because it's good for our business model.
Right.
At least people will know that that's happening. I mean, you know, if the CEO of your company says, yeah, we're going to put this in, even though it hasn't passed all the proper tests yet, we're putting it in anyway because we want to, then people will know that. And at least in theory, if you do that continually and gradually screw your community by doing it, you'll stop having a community.
I'll give you a concrete example of this and also where I think part of the problem lies here. I can't say the name of them, but I'm currently working with a company, and we were talking about exactly this. And one of the things I was saying to them is, whenever you want to add a new feature into the open source version, you have to submit this as a public pull request, right? And you need to go through the published community workflow that you've defined for this. Even though you have an employee of your company submitting the pull request, and you have two other employees of your company reviewing that pull request, ultimately approving it, and then merging it into the main branch, all of that stuff has to happen out in the open in GitHub. And for them, they were like, conceptually, yeah, that's obvious, because that's how open source gets built. It's all done out in the open, right? The conversation about what you're building and the norms of the project are done out in the open on Slack or mailing list or whatever, and in GitHub. But I think what they found unintuitive was, but these are just my employees. It would be way quicker for us to just get on a Google Hangout and talk through this. And one of the things I had to emphasize was, it doesn't matter. If you want to build a real open source project, there's got to be that history behind it. Otherwise, it won't be a real open source project. It will have the illusion of an open source project, but it won't have the workflow behind it. And I think a lot of open core companies wrestle with that a little bit.
I mean, don't you think Canonical wrestled with that the way they dropped Unity, even though it was actually good?
What do you mean?
That was not communicated in any way. It was worked on behind the scenes very much and then dropped.
Oh, yeah.
And well, I would not consider it Canonical in any way, shape, or form an open core company. So again, I think these aren't open core problems. They're business model
and that's
regular
kind of what I'm
company
getting at
problems.
That's kind of what I'm getting at. I mean, but I was just going to say very quickly, I think Unity is actually a good example of this. Canonical dropped their investment in Unity, which I think they're more within their rights to do. But looking back on what happened with Unity, I think the level of private discussion that went into Unity, the private designs in the original stage of this, that was not within the spirit of open source. And I think it was expected to be landed within open source. But it was difficult, because I think where it gets difficult is that I can understand why the community was critical of that. However, I can also understand that at the end of the day, you've just kind of got to get a start on something. But this is right in the middle of open core. Like within that was just part of Canonical and what we're doing in Ubuntu. But
you seem to be espousing way two different things there. If everything has to happen in public, you then just pivoted right to, but then sometimes you just got to get started with things.
No.
Which is
what
the opposite of things happening in public.
No, I think these are two different things, because the way Unity, to use that as an example, was proposed for inclusion into Ubuntu, did happen out in the open. I've got nothing against someone going away and having a private conversation about a new feature or a new branch or something along those lines and then proposing it. I think it's a suboptimal way because it's better if you have those conversations out in the open. What I'm saying is that if you've got two different cultures, Canonical was a weird example because I think with the open core model, generally, it's one company who is deliberately going to be seeking to build proprietary products that sit on top of that system. Canonical was never planning on building a enterprise version of Ubuntu. It was going to build things like Ubuntu One that would sit on the side of it. So therefore, I think you need to be ultra specific about your intentions when you're starting out with that model. Canonical had no idea what it was doing when it started out. It just wanted to build Ubuntu. So I think it morphed.
Ek, you were going to expand there. Yeah, curious what you were going to...
First of all, taking your example of the company saying, but it'd be way quicker if we just put our engineers together on a Google Hangout or something. Say, okay, fine, if that's what you want to do. But then the person who took that that Hangout meeting and then had the conversation about it has to be prepared to do that for any member of the community who wants to do it too. And then their boss will go, what? But then they'll spend all their day having conversations with people about features. You go, yeah, that's how it works. If you don't like that, make your people go through the same. Well, this is what I meant earlier about it becomes a bad thing to do when your people building the proprietary stuff have access to a bunch of secret stuff that community contributors don't. Whether that is the ability to ring up the maintainer of the core API stuff and say, put this in for me because I told you to, or access to the internal API documentation, or access to the person who can tell you that if there is no API documentation or whatever. That's where
always going to have that, right?
You unfairly privilege the
right
proprietary bits of the company against, frankly, proprietary bits of other companies. If you completely leave out open source here and just think of yourself as some kind of lunatic free marketeer, what you're doing is leveraging a monopoly against other companies. You've got the monopoly over your source code, at which point you're not open, right? Slightly strained analogy, but bear with me.
It's an interesting point, because if you're building a proprietary product that sits in an open source project, just because you're the only one that's done it doesn't necessarily mean you have a monopoly. If you control the means of production, then you do.
That's the point. It's not that you're the only person who's done it. It's that if you've got two companies, one of whom is you and the other one which is someone else, and you both need some new API put in, and that other company has to file an issue saying, we'd really like this API, and that issue then gets ignored for 2 years, and your guy just rings up someone else in the same company, says, we want this API, you have to put it in because you were told, and then they do it. That's totally unfair. That second company is going to think, we're being screwed here. How is this an open source project? It's not open source at all.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is kind of the fairness point, which is why we talked earlier about the elephantiest of the elephantist in the room. Where someone shows up with an open source contribution which duplicates or obviates one of your proprietary add-ons. What do you do in that situation? Because there's basically no good answer. You can either accept it and essentially throw away one of your revenue streams by doing so, which it would require the purest of open source fanatics to be prepared to do. And anyone who's that pure an open source fanatic isn't running a company. Or you say, no, we're not accepting it on day one when they suggest doing this. And then you look like a bunch of people who are protecting your business model over open source. Or you wait until the person's written it and then you reject it.
At
which point you look like a company who's protecting their business model open source, and that guy has a shit in your revolving door for making him waste 6 months of his life. Right?
What a poetic analogy.
You know it's going to happen. Don't do that, company.
But I mean, using the Redis example,
day one if you need to.
Example here, if someone else wanted to merge the equivalent of Redis search into Redis, the answer would have always been no.
Yeah.
And if you wanted to do so now, the answer would still be no, but Redis itself is still BSD3. You could still create a different version of Redis search and sell it as another company.
Yes. Yeah.
Because Redis Labs does a thing doesn't mean you can't do the same thing if you think you can do it better.
I agree.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure they're open core. That's a fork. They're selling a separate project, which just happens to have a bunch of Redis bundled into it. They're not selling an. I'm working through this in my head here, but they're not selling an add-on to Redis. They're not selling a thing where you go and get the Redis open source project and then you get their thing and combine them.
No, they're basing their product on Redis, the project, with a whole bunch of extra bits.
Yeah, you're buying Redis Labs, a proprietary product. It happens to use a bunch of Redis in there, and maybe this is sophistry because they're doing the bundling instead of you. But equally, Windows used the BSD TCP stack for ages, right? That's similar. I mean, it's a different scale.
But so by your definition, almost nothing is open core.
Which is why I think it's meaningless work.
Interesting. So you don't consider then GitLab or Redis open core?
I have, we discussed this a week ago, and I've spent time reading up on it, and everything that I've read makes me conclude that I still don't know what open core is. And I can say I think this business model is a good thing to do, or this business model is a bad thing to do. But which ones of those you arbitrarily label open core and where the boundaries are, to me, it doesn't seem like a useful distinction. It's only useful if you want to write articles saying, is open core a good idea? Or let us help your business do open core in the future.
And this is where I think the conversation is interesting, because there is no open core is not a good or bad business model, and it's not good or bad. I think, as with every other business model on earth, it's a good fit for some specific companies in some specific situations, and it's a terrible fit for others. So I guess I'm a little confused that a lot of the conversation is it a good business model? Because nothing is a good business model for everything, right? It's just not, there doesn't exist.
Yeah,
there
wouldn't be multiple business
models. Well, that's my point.
Of course, but I think what we're saying is, broadly, do we think that this is something that A, works, and B, is valuable, right? Because I would argue that, look, I think part of the challenge here is there is a fixed open source definition, right? We can get very specific on. There is no fixed real definition of open core. I think there is a spirit of open core that people are talking about. And I think we've talked a lot today about the spirit of it. And I think what we're saying is there is no really fixed firm definition of it.
Well,
it's just generally the balance between a proprietary bit of software that sits on top of an open source bit of software. And massively, I would actually go so far as to say it is a model that works, but the level of nuance and the level of expertise you need to have in open source, especially in getting that balance right, is significant. I think it's a really error-prone model if you get it wrong.
And it's basically impossible to be expert in open core without being expert in open source first.
Yeah.
You can't say I understand, I help people, I do businesses as open core without properly understanding open source in order to do it, even if only to know which bits it's reasonable to diverge from, which bits aren't. A question, because we were all there at the time, right? And I don't remember this. I feel like if you produce the open core definition, if you nailed down a definition of open core to a page, a whole bunch of people would disagree with it or would feel that the thing they're doing is open core, but it isn't included, either because their thing is now suddenly open core where they didn't think it was, or their thing is not open core where they thought it was. Yeah, you know, either way.
Yeah.
But I don't remember that happening with the open source definition. When they nailed the definition of open source to a page, I don't remember there being a lot of people going, no, that fundamentally does not represent my views of what open source is. There were a whole bunch of people who said it didn't represent the definition of what free software was.
I was going to say, at the time, it was a pretty contested definition.
Yeah, but there weren't people who said, this is not what I think open source is. There were people saying there should not be a thing called open source at all. There should be free software, and open source shouldn't exist. I don't remember anyone suggesting a different definition of open, a fundamentally different definition of what open source should be. You have people saying there should be no such thing.
And there was lots of bickering on the licenses, like GPL3.
Yeah, and there are a whole bunch of people right now saying there should be no such thing as open core, whatever the hell it is. But I feel like whatever definition you came up with, I think you'd leave 40% of people using the word out in the cold.
Yeah.
But am I wrong about either of those things? Was open source more contested than I remember it being? Sorry, was the open source definition more contested than I remember it being? Or do you think that you could write a definition of open core which wasn't so vague as to be meaningless and would get most everybody saying the words on board?
I don't think there's been anything in open source that's not been steeped in debate.
Yeah, but I think open source is more of a philosophical construct. Because open core is a business model, like, it'd be tough to nail it down that much, because business models always have like a circle where you're somewhere on that axis. Not, there is no definition for most business models, because you need to adapt it to what, you know, product market fit and everything else has to go in there. So it's I don't think you're comparing apples and apples here. I don't even think you're comparing apples and oranges.
No, I agree.
Okay, no, that's fair.
I think people see open core as like a model in the loosest sense of the word, right? It's kind of like it's more of a relationship between two disparate entities, which is the open source project and the proprietary product, and what's involved. This is one of the reasons why I bristle a little bit when people start saying either open core is brilliant or open core is terrible, because there is so much, I think, ambiguity in this that we're often talking past each other and it's about separate things. And frankly, tooting our own horn a little bit, I think this conversation is one of the most comprehensive conversations I've seen about this. Because usually you get people who fall into one of those two camps. People like, open core is terrible. Or people who are on the other side, which is open core is the future of how we build open source businesses. I just think it's all about, I think there's a way more culture buried in this than anybody expected, is my worry about that.
I think it'll be interesting to see how all these open core companies do in 3, 5, 7 years and see how the business model changes and what iterations they have to make to be successful.
Yeah. The other thing, and I know we're kind of bringing this into the finish line, is what worries me a bit about this conversation more broadly as well is that people often use, like I've experienced this a lot when talking to clients, when talking about open source businesses, everybody talks about Red Hat. And I have to always say, like, Red Hat are a bad example, right? Because they've been incredibly successful, but they're, again, a bit of a unicorn, like you were touching on earlier on, Jeremy, with GitLab. Like, there's no one else like them, right? So I think people need to start pointing to other examples when talking about these kinds of models.
And I think the other thing that people maybe underestimate is Red Hat was really good at engineering economics. Open source aside, they were a sound business model, and from an engineering perspective, made good decisions, and then also made good business decisions. And the fact that they were open source was secondary to that fact.
Yeah.
They were a successful enterprise software company that happened to be open source, I think.
They nailed it on so many levels, right? They got the culture right. Yep. They got the engineering right. They got the business right. They were early. Good work, Red Hat. So I would love to hear what the Bad Voltage community thinks about this. So be sure, folks, to go and join the Slack channel and go and join the conversation. Like, what do you think? What's your definition of open core? Would be a good question. Where do you see the lines drawn between the open source project and the proprietary product? I know we don't want to say, do we think it's okay? But broadly, where do you think are the good points and the bad points with open core? That work well and don't
I
guess work well.
When I was making that point, was I was curious what context you meant. Okay, philosophically or business model or like there's
all of the above.
Right. Yeah. So it's a multifaceted discussion.
I think that's the fundamental question is what should people be doing to do this well?
Yes.
What would be if you had to write your quotes, open core, unquotes, handbook of how what to do and what not to do, what would you put in that list? What are the three things you should do and the three things you shouldn't? This is not something for you to answer now, but it's something that I think would be interesting to hear the community's answers on. What would be the things you would say you definitely must do this, otherwise you'll be bad at it. You definitely mustn't do this, otherwise you'll be bad at it.
I would also like to hear people's suggestions. We've used a relatively small sprinkling of examples here, right? And I would love to see other people's what springs to mind when it comes to examples of this? Ones that have worked well and ones that have not worked. I'd especially like to see examples of bad cases of OpenCore. The people who've really got it wrong and people who've got the balance wrong in your definition, however you define OpenCore.
And that's going to be interesting because there's a whole bunch of people who've done it successfully who don't necessarily leap to mind as being OpenCore. I mean, Chrome, Android, we've talked about GitLab, are one that do leap to mind quite immediately. And I'm not sure what the distinction is there, why people don't say, what's the most popular OpenCore company or most popular OpenCore product? Android, right? But it's not one that people think of. People go, Cassandra, which is, you know, no one was
Lindos.
Wow. Linspi- did I forget about
Coral Linux?
There's a blast from the past.
Kevin Carmody, remember him?
Man, we actually have in our notes to go over this, we mentioned something which we didn't, the conversation didn't come around to it, but I want to say it out loud because it's the first time anyone's said these words out loud for about 15 years, which is Zimian red carpet.
That's right, we didn't get into it, did we?
We did not get into it.
I know, but I feel like its name should be heard aloud in the land one more time.
may it be heard throughout this open source land.
Yay, even all unto the 50th generation.
Bad voltage in 2020, discussing red carpet and Lindos. Cutting edge.
It's a step on from the Kindle version 1 or whatever it was.
Shut
we talked
up
about
with the Kindle
the
reviews.
About
okay?
The comment is I was just going to say it.
Of course you were, because you're both dicks. That's the reason why you were both going to say it. Try to think of ways to enhance this show. Nothing but criticism, people. All right, so that's it. I hope you found this conversation useful. Be sure to get into the Bad Voltage community. Come and join us and have a good time. And I guess we'll see you all on the next one.